This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Bob Garfield is away. I'm Brooke Gladstone. This week in the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, Judge Brett Kavanaugh wrote, "I know my tone was sharp and I said a few things I should not have said." Note that he regretted the words, not the anger. His display of outrage, of anguish, weren't for show. No, they were the whole ball game. Until this process ends, and as I write this, I don't know yet how, Kavanaugh hasn't yet won the post he seeks of Supreme Judicial Umpire. He's just a player, and the courtside contingent is mad.
What left-wing groups and their Democratic allies have done to Judge Kavanaugh isn't nothing short of monstrous.
A successful confirmation for Judge Kavanaugh this weekend would be the kicker to a nearly month-long revolt against the consequences for hurting women that the Me Too movement strives to apply. When we spoke with Slate staff writer Lily Loofborough last November, she explained several of the logical fallacies used by the culture to excuse or ignore bad behavior. We called on her again to identify the new fallacies she's seen lately, like the anti-bandwagon fallacy.
The anti-bandwagon fallacy is something I kind of made up to explain a tendency that I've noticed where a news item's truth content actually diminishes for people as more accusations emerge. We saw, for instance, with Dr. Christine Blasey Ford.
I've never seen so many repressed memory cases in my life, especially against one guy.
Yeah.
So the question is, if there's something awry going on, was there hypnosis?
A conspiracy.
Yeah. When Moore emerged, a lot of people, I think, on the right interpreted that to be a bandwagon that invalidated the initial accusation. Something else that I heard recently is the Darvo effect or technique, which is a way that a lot of people who are accused respond.
DARVO stands for Deny, Attack, and Reverse Victim and Offender.
Donald Trump has really excelled at finding a way to turn every accusation against him into an occasion for his victimization and, by extension, the victimization of those who associate themselves with him. We certainly see Brett Kavanaugh doing something similar. We find male anger, I think, very disorienting because men are told to repress. And so when we see somebody in a very high-stakes situation emoting powerfully, that tends to us to scan as an index of authenticity.
In front of the nation, we saw his righteous indignation. He choked back his tears and aimed his fury not at Dr. Ford, but rather of this unfair confirmation process, which frankly is an embarrassment.
And I saw in the aftermath of the hearing a surprising number of pundits describing both his testimony and hers as equally credible, which I found astonishing. But once again, we tend to find anger, especially when it comes from a man, to be somehow corroborating. It's one of the things that we are taught.
Another thing that was on display this week is that men now must live in fear.
Right? I got boys and I got girls. It's scary. For all things. I mean, I wouldn't want
Who are you scared most for, your sons or your daughters?
I mean, right now, I'd say my sons.
Fear of injury to their reputation, essentially, regarded as equally weighty as women living in fear for their safety.
The most stunning revelation about the recent round of defenses of Brett Kavanaugh is that he should be confirmed even if the allegations against him are true. That is the blatant double standard that is being spoken aloud in ways that I did not expect.
It's almost a codification of boys will be boys.
it's popular right now to say, well, norms have changed, and back then people didn't know. They knew. It's not that any 17-year-old boy didn't understand that holding his hand over a screaming woman as she tried to escape was wrong. It's that he thought he could get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
We all knew sexual harassment was wrong. We tolerated it anyway. That has been, I think, the line governing a lot of the Me Too movement and a lot of the response to it. What's truly surprising to me at this moment is that we are seeing a group that spent years laughing at the very idea of anything like, quote, rape culture, suddenly not just admitting that it exists, but arguing that it should. Male malfeasance is an unstoppable cocktail of culture and biology, and the subtext, stripped of all the pretense, is that the victims don't actually matter. Just by coincidence, as all of this was happening, I kept stumbling across news stories that almost laughably confirmed how overblown this panic about men suddenly being persecuted really is, because these are cases where men were found guilty in a court of law of sexual assault and received no jail time anyway, right? So in Anchorage, Justin Schneider was indicted by a grand jury last month on 4 felony charges, and he was accused of offering a woman a ride, strangling her until she was unconscious, and masturbating on her. But he got no jail time.
Schneider did not apologize for his actions, but thanked the judge for accepting the deal.
I'd just like to emphasize how grateful I am for this process. It has given me a year to really work on myself and become a better person and a better husband and a better father, and I'm very eager to continue that journey.
And the district attorney for the case, in fact, called him losing his job punishment enough. He called that a life sentence.
Wow.
Yeah.
You observed that a majority of the GOP has said that even if Kavanaugh is guilty of doing what he did, it isn't disqualifying. You think that shows real contempt for women's safety and that it gives the lie to the whole notion of courtliness and especially chivalry. What do you mean by that?
I mean that chivalry is a protection racket and always has been.
In other words, you give us your fealty, you allow us to limit your ambitions and control your speech and behavior, and you won't get hurt?
You won't get hurt, and maybe you'll be financially supported. But if you don't, you will be punished. That's the flip side of that, and I think that that has been exposed. You see what happens to people who step out of line. You see how Dr. Ford has been treated. You see how the other women who have spoken up are treated by the GOP, whether it's Dianne Feinstein, whether it's Senator Klobuchar, whether it's Cecilia Vega.
She's shocked that I picked her.
No.
She's like in a state of shock.
I'm not thinking, Mr.
That's
President.
Okay. I know you're not thinking. You never do.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
In a tweet this weekend, Mr. President,
we are in a moment where the status quo is trying its hardest to hypercorrect by saying out loud the things that it used to paper over with a socially acceptable veneer of chivalry. When you have a class of people who had things arranged such that in any situation that involves a man and a woman alone, the woman absorbs 100% of the risk to her physical safety and to her reputation, and he shoulders none, of course, they are going to be extremely upset. For men to have to shoulder any amount of risk under those circumstances becomes intolerable. Their distress is real. One of the things that really struck me during the hearing was how anger circulated in that room and how the one person not permitted to express any was Christine Blasey Ford. The theatrics that the GOP demonstrated in the second half of that hearing involved a lot of grabbing the anger ball, so to speak, and just out screaming.
You know what it reminded me of? In basketball, there's this thing that players do sometimes called flopping. They're touched by another player and then they fall hard on the floor, hoping that the umps call a foul.
And Boozer just throws Ori to the ground.
He didn't throw him. Robert Ori, every time he comes up to set a screen, if there's any contact, is going to fall to the ground.
All right, let's take a look.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah. That is a strategic performance that cannot be honored. And I think that the Me Too movement has unleashed a lot of anger that has never been permitted to be expressed or felt.
Don't you wave your hand at me. I wave my hand at you.
When you grow up, Robinson.
When I grow up, we grow up. How dare you talk to women that way? How dare you?
You tell me when I'm talking to you, you're telling me that my assault doesn't matter. That what happened to me doesn't matter.
And I think that that is a pretty potent tool. And honestly, I think it's actually very healthy for people who have been repressing and bottling up their anger into a socially acceptable performance for as long as they have been feeling it, to be able to finally express it.
So are you talking about Democratic women or Lindsey Graham?
I'm talking about Democratic women. I think Lindsey Graham has been expressing just fine. I think he's okay. But when I see that a man is very angry, it's a very instinctive reaction. I'm a little bit afraid, and I think to myself, oh, well, he must be right in some way. I should retreat a little bit and give ground, that I find myself no longer being very impressed by. I think I'm not alone. The intimidating function that male anger used to serve, I think, is wearing thin.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Lily Loofborough is a staff writer for Slate. Coming up, the bestseller, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, documents the demise of Native American civilization. A Native American writer takes issue with that.